You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Kraft. I'm here on behalf of Preston McKellar, the appellant in this matter. This matter falls under the Virginia Workers' Compensation Act. The claimant in the matter is a 65-year-old shipyard, Newport News Shipbuilding employee of 42 years. He had put in for retirement briefly before his injury, had an injury, and within a couple weeks thereafter, he returned back to work quickly thereafter. Within a couple weeks of that time, his retirement became effective. He was thereafter taken fully out of work and deemed totally incapacitated by his treating physician as of approximately 2 weeks after his retirement. The central issue in the case was whether he was entitled to temporary total disability benefits corresponding to his total incapacity from that date forward. Initially, the deputy commissioner in the case found that based on the total incapacity, he was entitled to benefits despite his retirement. He did note in that opinion that had the claimant remained on light duty, continued on light duty that period of time, it is possible the shipyard could have defended the case based on his partial incapacity by saying he had removed himself from the labor market. However, those are not the facts of the case. And there was no dispute, and there's no dispute here on review that the claimant in the case was totally incapacitated from all work during the period of time claimed.
You said there's no dispute concerning that?
Correct.
Correct.
After that period of time, the case was appealed up to the full commission. The full commission, with one dissenting commissioner, reversed the opinion, finding that the retirement, the fact the claimant had put in for retirement prior to his injury and prior to the time of his disability meant he had effectively removed himself from the workforce and was not entitled to the benefits in question. The claimant takes issue with that finding. The Court of Appeals obviously affirmed that opinion. The primary language that we point to with regard to the argument is the use of the term incapacity when defining a claimant's entitlement to total disability benefits under the Workers' Comp Act. Traditionally, when the case is before the commission, the process in looking at the issue of disability is you first look to what is the level of capacity, can the person work or can they not work? In the case of total incapacity, as in this case, generally benefits have been traditionally awarded across the board, subject to various other defenses. The second stage is, and the focus after that point on other factors, such as marketing, looking for other work, economic factors, really comes into play when you talk about partial incapacity for work as opposed to total. In that case, the worker has restrictions that preclude them from returning back to what they did at the time of their injury, but they have the ability to perform other work. They have the capacity to perform other work. Again, that is not the case, the situation before this case. On the statute itself, the claimant takes the position that benefits should have been awarded under those circumstances. That has traditionally been the practice before the commission. I've been practicing 20 years, and that's the application that has applied. As a matter of fact, the commission, my impression is that the deputy commissioner would not have taken evidence on whether the claimant in this case had an intention to look for other work if at some point in the future they were released to some type of work. We didn't get into the issue of marketing because it's never traditionally been required in this situation. In our impression and position is that the Court of Appeals and the Commission, in their opinions, have basically changed the game, have changed the law, have applied the law in a different way than they have applied in various other cases. By reference to prior case law in my brief and in the brief of the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association's work of the claimant's position in this case, we go through various retirement cases, all of which have found that even in the face of the retirement, a claimant is entitled to benefits if their capacity for work is zero, if they have a total incapacity for work. That's consistent with the statute. They have denied benefits in cases where they retained a partial incapacity for work and did not adequately market or look for other work. The idea being it was their decision to remove themselves from the workforce when that affects their ability to obtain the benefits. But again, that presupposes that they have the ability to form some type of alternate work or they have some partial capacity. That's the integral factor throughout all the cases that are briefed. That's the integral factor to the claimant's argument. by reference to other types of cases involving claimant conduct under the Workers' Comp Act, a claimant who is partially incapacitated but is fired for reasons unrelated to the work injury, resigns from the employment that's being provided by the employer, is incarcerated when they have a partial incapacity, or refuses some type of work that is offered by the employer. They are not, when they have partial capacity to work, they have restrictions and can do some work. If they take those actions, they can be penalized for that, essentially penalized for that. At the same time, even in those cases, in all those circumstances, where the incapacity for work is total, they are entitled to the benefits. They're entitled to the total disability benefits. I think it's important to go back and look at some of the fundamental purposes of the workers' comp law in general in evaluating this issue. It's not a fault-based system. Workers' comp is there. It's not based on moral choices, things like that. There are some boundaries, as I've alluded to, but when looking at the statute within that context, the use of the term incapacity for work under Section 65.2-500 is incredibly important.
How did the injury cause his loss of compensation?
Workers' compensation is aimed at combating the loss of...
Right, I understand all that, but just tell me how his injury caused his loss of compensation.
During the period of time we're talking about, Your Honor, we would submit that his preclusion from any other type of work by virtue of the determination by the treating physician of a no-work status makes it inherently
impossible. So you're saying that at the time he filed his retirement papers... At the time he filed his retirement papers, he was actually thinking about doing some other work during his retirement.
Your Honor, I understand your point.
Is there evidence of that?
There is not, Your Honor. And the reason for that is because traditionally it's not been required in these circumstances. Again, had he been released, had by the time we've gone to hearing, been released to light duty work, in order for him to continue to get any types of benefits once he was released to that type of work, he would have had to market his remaining work capacity, look for other work. And even then, the employer may have had a defense based on if they could prove that they would continue to have work available to him but for his retirement.
If we make the distinction between economic loss for partial disability and earning capacity for total disability, then one's intention to work would not be relevant to earning capacity, or would it? And I'll probably ask the same question to your opposing counsel.
Understood. I would say that in the case of total incapacity for work, when the worker has been deemed to be unable to do work of any kind during the period of time the benefits are claimed, that the intention is relevant. What they intend to do at some unforeseeable point in the future under different circumstances than exist at the time of go to hearing, that can't be relevant. It calls for speculation. I mean, in terms of the integrity of the judicial system and what we are required to prove before a deputy commissioner, we could always ask that question, but at the same time...
If we found that the test was economic loss, then intention would be relevant.
Not to the extent that the statute calls for the focus on capacity. When you're talking about...
My question presupposed, if we were to find that the economic loss test was the appropriate test for a partial disability, for a total disability, I may have misspoken, then intention would be relevant.
It could be, and I understand the point. Again, I think the difficulty...
If I never intended to work, then I have no economic loss from not working.
Understood. At the same time, again, the appellant's position here is very focused on that incapacity issue. When you're talking about a total disability, you can get a total disability in one of two ways. When you have a total incapacity, a total disability entitlement. When you have a total incapacity, in which case your ability to market yourself or whatnot, economic factors relative to the market are irrelevant. When you're looking at a partially capacity, person has the ability to do some work, then those other factors do come into play. And again, in that situation, the employer, had Mr. McKellar been in a light-duty status, would more than likely have defended against any total disability benefits based on his retirement. They probably would have won that. As a matter of fact, procedurally before the commission, the employer still has the ability to file an application upon Mr. McKell's release to late-duty employment. They have the ability to hire a doctor to evaluate him for determination of physical capacity. If they do that and the commission agrees there's a partial incapacity and they prove that they could have provided work within those limitations, they would more than likely succeed on terminating benefits. And I think it's on that point we get to the idea of unjust enrichment. Workers' comp isn't a social welfare system. It is a separate system from Social Security, separate system from an individual's retirement or ability to retire through, let's say, the International Longshoremen's Association or something like that, where they have years of service and have the ability to take that pension regardless of entitlement to workers' comp benefits, and workers' comp benefits aren't offset by that. At the same time, the employer doesn't become forever bound to Mr. McKellar, forever bound to pay Mr. McKellar. They have measures they can take to reduce that liability.
Did Mr. McKellar actually go back to work after the accident but before the retirement date?
He did. He returned. His accident was April 15th, 2010. He returned shortly after his retirement became effective May 1st, 2010.
Is there significance to that?
I think there is a significance in the event he is again released to light-duty employment. I think it comes into play again. I think it comes into what the Deputy Commissioner said. Had he retired or had he retained a residual work capacity during the period we're claiming benefits, had he had that capacity, that becomes relevant because the shipyard could say, hey, we had work for him. He would have just continued to work. And it is the retirement. But that, again, the crucial distinction there is one of the level of capacity and the use of the term where the use of incapacity is total, temporary total disability benefits shall be paid.
Counsel, in the Court of Appeals opinion, on page 7, this sentence reads, a worker who also retired on May 1, 2010 but did not suffer any injury would have suffered the same alleged economic loss as the claimant. Do you disagree with that?
I think that it again presupposes something we, at the procedural stage we were at in this case, it essentially equates retirement with total economic loss. And I think it again, that statement avoids making the recognition that incapacity is different than economic loss. It presupposes, again, it goes back to the idea that if you're saying in any case where it equates retirement with complete economic loss. And again, I think it avoids the issue that the central purpose of the Act is to address loss of earning capacity. And again, Mr. McKellar, in this case, during the period claimed, not necessarily forever, during the period claimed and at the time we went to hearing, had a total incapacity for work. And our position is that the Comp Act, in all prior circumstances across the board, even in situations where it may come across as unusual for benefits to have been awarded, such as the person who has a total disability period while incarcerated and can't work. I think it changes the game for all those cases. I think this argument then becomes available all across the board in all the cases that have been decided under those doctrines. I think it changes the law pretty dramatically. And I think to that extent, I think the case results in what would be a series, I think, ultimately of unpredictable results. Or different results in those cases. I think there's going to be more cases coming up as a result of that. And again, I've cited many of these in my brief, and the amicus brief also cited various types of cases as illustration of what I'm talking about. If the court doesn't have any other questions, thank you.
39 seconds left for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. My name is Ben Mason. I appear on behalf of the appellees, Northrop Grumman Shipbuilding and Huntington Ingalls Incorporated. Mr. Kraft and I certainly do not disagree on the facts of this case. I think there's substantial agreement that his client put in for retirement around April the 1st of 2010, suffered an injury on April the 15th of 2010, returned to work at his employment with the shipyard about 4 or 5 days later, and continued to work for the next week or so until his retirement became official as of May the 1st, 2010.
Did he actually work? Or did he just say goodbye to his friends?
No, no. He came in and he had a job and he worked. He was on light duty restrictions. There were some restrictions on what he could and couldn't do, but he did work, and he worked up until the last day. And at that point, I don't think during the course of the trial there was never any indication or any argument that he wasn't given legitimate work, that he was just said, okay, go do something for a week or so, go sit in the office and say hello to your friends. He was given actual work to do, and there's been no suggestion from any of the evidence of anything to the contrary. He then, when he retires being on light duty, he went to see a doctor, and the treating doctor at that point in time referred him for an MRI, and then later that doctor retired and he went on to be treated by another doctor, and both those two doctors then took him out of work, saying that he was unfit for duty at that point.
What was that date? You know, the date of his total.
It was May the 14th of 2015 that he saw Dr. Stiles, S-T-I-L-E-S. His restrictions that were put on him before he retired went up through May the 7th, but it was about a week later that he saw Dr. Stiles.
Does he ask for any benefits before May 14th?
He requests benefits beginning May the 14th, none before that.
Okay.
And so that is the employer's position, and I think understood by Mr. Kraft, that we indicate that he hasn't lost wages as a result of this injury, as a result of the fact that later, after having retired, his doctors have indicated that he is unable to work or that he is not fit for duty. There was absolutely no evidence submitted on behalf of the claimant to suggest that he intended to go back to work. He, in fact, had been working at the shipyard for 42 years, and when he turned 65, he decided it was time to retire. And unfortunately, a couple weeks before he retired, he tripped over something that was welded to the bulkhead and hurt himself. We don't deny that he suffered an injury. We're just here suggesting that the evidence is that he hasn't lost wages as a result of that injury.
What about loss of earning capacity?
Yeah.
Well, his capacity to earn wages, there may be, at least temporarily, or at least for some time, there may be an inability to earn wages when a doctor is taking him out of work. But loss of wages and loss of wage earning capacity, I suggest that most people that retire maintain a wage earning capacity if they had chosen to go back and do something else. If they decided that, hey, I've been at home on the couch for a month and this isn't really for me, I'm going to go out and find something to do, whether it be part-time work, whether it be volunteer work, something.
Well, counsel, the statute makes no mention of loss of wages. It says the statute is just as unambiguous as can be. When the employee suffers a loss of wage earning capacity, and it seems to me that you're not disputing that he lost wage earning capacity, and if that's so, the statute says he's got to be compensated during the period of total disability.
I interpret the statute, and I think what the Court of Appeals said and what the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission said is the inability to earn wages has got to be, the loss of wages and the incapacity has got to be as a result of the injury.
Well, I didn't ask you what the Court of Appeals said. The statute, as I understand it, says when the capacity for work resulting from injury is total, the employer shall pay capacity. Now, is there any other way to read that?
I think that it is incumbent in each and every time you look at it, what was the causation of the incapacity? If the incapacity is due to his retirement, then he's not entitled to be compensated as a result of that.
Well, the statute says when it is caused by work-related injury, and apparently the record is clear that he was put on total disability because he was found totally incapacitated to do his work. According to the medical opinions, and the trier of fact accepted that.
I understand the question. I would just suggest that it's always there's always a question of causation, and it's the one of the fundamental purposes of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Act, as well as other Workers' Compensation Act, is that the cause for the disability must be due to the work and not due to some other problem. Here we're suggesting, and I think it's clear, that the reason he's lost any work and lost any wages is because of the fact that he had suffered an injury but had put in for retirement before that and was able to work up to the time that he retired. And his doctors subsequent to that have taken him out of work. Now, he was already out of work. He's not losing anything as a result of those doctors at least opining it at this point that he would be unable to work shortly after his retirement. I submit that the issue is whether or not his inability, his loss of wages is due to the fact that he was injured and not due to the fact that he retired. I submit that it's pretty clear from that he wasn't losing wages as a result of that.
Okay, granted, agreeing with what you just said, but his loss of earning capacity is not because of his retirement. Because of his injury. Isn't that correct?
His loss of earning capacity is due to the retirement, not due to the injury, is what I think that is what, if I understood your question correctly.
I worded it exactly the opposite. His loss of wages is because of his retirement.
That's correct.
But his loss of his ability to earn wages or his earning capacity is because of the injury.
He was, in fact, his doctor said he could not work beginning in May of 2014 while they did test and did an MRI, and he has never, as far as I know, he's never been returned to light-duty capacity. Again, I would suggest that is because he has retired, and those doctors, it's actually in Dr. Wardell's notes, that he understands that Mr. McKellar has retired, and so that there would be no need for them to return him to some kind of light-duty status at that point.
But come on, if that was the case, you guys get an IME and you get your doctor to say he's perfectly fine, he can go to work. It's not a question of whether he wants to work, it's a question of whether he has the ability to work. So why would it matter whether he's retired one way or another? In a medical evaluation of his ability to work.
Again, I think that it makes a difference in that he's got the burden to show us that his loss of wages, and I know that incapacity is out there. But
where does this burden come from? How did this burden fall upon him to prove to you when he's totally disabled that he has a loss of earning capacity?
I think it's just written in the Workers' Compensation Act that the claimant must come.
Can you show it to me? I haven't seen that in the Workers' Compensation Act.
Well, it's in 65.2 in the 500s. I think it's 502, but it may be.
But 502 talks about partial disability. Exactly. It is in 502. But this is not a 502 case, right?
It's not. No, he's claiming total disability.
Exactly.
And so I think that the idea of someone receiving, and this is a question that Justice Clanahan asked earlier, the idea of someone who is not injured retiring and getting no other benefit, and then someone that is injured receiving more benefits as a result of that, you've got two different people in situations where one is getting treated better than the other. This man has
retired. But the one who's not injured has the capacity to go out and continue to earn money if he or she so chooses. They could go be a greeter at Walmart or some other kind of retired position, whereas the one who has suffered a total injury and loss of earning capacity has no capacity to earn any additional income.
I believe, I understand the question. I guess the point is that you're having two different people who have similar backgrounds, that is, they worked at a shipyard, they worked wherever, and both retired, and now someone who was able to work at the time they retired and has lost no wages because of that until sometime after the retirement had taken place would now be entitled to benefits that the other retired employee does not get. So that I think that the difference in them, they should not be treated any differently, but the fundamental argument that
they are different. They are different because of their different capacities. One can go supplement his retirement income, and the other can't through working.
One can go supplement it if he chooses to. The other one could have, you know, could have sought employment, or could have submitted evidence to the deputy commissioner when he took the evidence that that was his intention. He was just had enough of working at shipyard for 42 years, I think it was, and that he's retiring because of his age of 65, but he certainly intends to go out and earn wages in the future. But that wasn't his testimony.
One of the issues before us is whether intention is in fact relevant when it's total instead of partial. But help to educate me, because I don't know nearly as much as you do about workers' compensation. If, in fact, this case had ended with the deputy commissioner's holding, and he was on total disability as a retiree, how often could the shipyard require him to submit to an IME to determine if his disability was still total?
I think the statute would allow the employer to get an independent medical evaluation per each specialty, I think, once a year.
Okay.
It may just limit it to one per specialty. I'm not sure if it's one per year, but there is the statute that indicates you can get an IME per specialty. So you could get an orthopedist or a neurosurgeon or somebody to do different IMEs on him.
And presumably you could continue to do that after a reasonable period of time had passed. You believe it's a year, but it's not like you get one bite at the apple and that's it for the rest of his life.
I haven't looked at that statute. I believe you can have more than one after a period of time, but I can't tell you that's exactly what the statute says.
I appreciate that. Yes.
Assume for the sake of this hypothetical that the company had a provision for you to revoke your retirement before you actually took it. And this man decided, I have a pretty good idea what the workers' compensation laws say. I'm going to take advantage of that. I'm going to revoke my retirement. What's the cause of his incapacity then?
I still think that at the point that he puts in for retirement and fills out all the paperwork.
No. I've got a new fact in there. I mean, I know that's what the facts are in this case. Presume that he can revoke that.
Then the question is, what is his loss?
No, what's the cause of his incapacity?
The cause of his incapacity, if he's able to revoke that, I would submit that it's still due to the fact that...
The retirement that he's not taking?
Well, if you're saying he took it and then revoked it...
No, he's before
he
the day
revoked
of retirement.
It before he started.
You know, he said, I've been injured here...
I decided not to retire.
I decided not to retire.
And I think under that circumstance, based on a doctor's opinion, he's incapable of working and he's still on roll as an employee of the shipyard or wherever it is that he may work. And that's a completely different situation.
Well,
it's
a different situation because I added a different fact in there. But if you agree that he would then hit the source and the cause of his incapacity is the injury, why is it any different if he goes on and retires?
And I think it's different only because he voluntarily chose to retire. Had he been able to withdraw that and stay on roles, then the question is he injured and unable to work? And I think that would entitle him to get compensation. But once he has retired, and at the time that he was retired, he was not incapable of working. He was on light duty restrictions. And at that point in time, I think that he loses the ability to get workers' comp because he's no longer losing
and
wages.
Does that extend forever if he decides he wants to be the Walmart greeter, but he can't be the Walmart greeter because he is disabled totally? Can he come back to the commission and say, I've decided I want to go back, I'm not going to rescind my retirement, but I want to be a Walmart greeter. Can I get workers' comp now?
My feeling is no, you can't, only because he had the opportunity when he had this hearing to let the commission know whether or not he intended to work. There are plenty of cases in which injured employees say, look, I don't know that I can continue to work here.
So in light of the intent of the legislation, of the whole workers' comp scheme, wouldn't it make more sense that if his earning capacity is reduced because of this injury, that he would draw workers' comp as opposed to retirement? Because he can't undo it the other way. You all can undo it if he becomes less than totally disabled.
When awarding compensation or when receiving compensation, I think that you look at what his wages were before and whether or not the loss of wages is due to this injury. And so I don't know that he'd be able to go back to the commission and ask for them to say, hey, all of a sudden I've decided I want to go back to work. Can you now award me benefits? He had that opportunity when he was before the commission, and Mr. Kraft acknowledges that those questions were never asked.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Kraft, you have 39 seconds. Use it well if you'd like.
I appreciate that. I think that the majority is covered with the questioning. I would note that Mr. McKellar has been released elected. The employer has not filed an application for hearing, but they do have the ability to do that, to then attempt to reduce any ongoing liability in the case, which again goes back to our point that this is not a permanent situation and that there are measures to address this particular situation in light of the statutory scheme and in light of how the Act has been applied to date in these cases.
Thank you. Nice arguments, gentlemen. The court will be in recess and will reconvene at 20 minutes till noon.
Thank you.